Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 121, Hobby Bunker Game Day 2014. So I want to welcome all of you, both new and longtime listeners alike. And if you are new to the show, I think you're in for a treat. And if you're a longtime listener, yeah, you know what the deal is. So for today's episode, the topic, as I had said, is the Hobby Bunker Game Day. I mentioned it briefly in episode 120, Wargaming with Kids, which I hope you've had the chance to listen to, and hopefully you've enjoyed it as well. And I mentioned it because Superstar GM Mike Payne, who I talked about in episode 120, Wargaming with Kids, would be running an event at the Hobby Bunker Game Day. As of the time that I'm recording this, the game day is over, so hopefully if you wanted to go, you were in the area and were able to. If not, don't worry, there'll be another one next time in 2015 and 2016. They're going to do it for a long time to come, I'm sure. So what is the game day? Well, the Hobby Bunker, I should start off with, is this fantastic, friendly local game store in Malden, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, just like north of Boston, right over the line a little bit, kind of. And they do lots of like historical wargaming with their folks. They have other stuff, of course. There's pulp gaming, there's 40K and fantasy, all that kind of stuff, and classic toy soldiers, and they do regular gaming events, and you can play like X-Wing and all that kind of stuff in board games, of course. They sell lots and lots of historical wargaming product, stuff you can't find in any other stores around here in the U.S. at least, and maybe not anywhere else in the U.S. I'm sure you could probably find this stuff in the U.K. and in Europe, because those of you who live there are very lucky to be where a lot of the manufacturers just seem to be. But for those of us here across the pond, as it were, it's hard. And especially here in New England, there's a lot of game stores, but the focus seems to be on Magic the Gathering, role-playing games like D&D, and then, of course, the other kind of stuff like Warhammer 40K, Warhammer Fantasy. And if you wanted to do historical, you're lucky if you can find some Flames of War. If you want to do anything else, you're usually out of luck. But that's why the Hobby Bunker is fantastic, because they have all this kind of stuff, and it's amazing what you can find. Now, not only is the Hobby Bunker a great place to shop, but it's a great venue to game at. The front half of the store is full of the gaming stuff that you can buy. And then you go into like the back half, and they have tables set up that you can play in. It's not a gigantic space, but it's large enough that they have something like 8 or 10 tables that are 6x4, and you can play all sorts of games on them. They have open gaming on Saturdays. And then, of course, for events like this, you can fit a decent number of people. It's easy to get to the Hobby Bunker. There's a train station not too far by on, I don't know, it's Orange Line or something like that. I might be wrong. Don't quote me. And there's a parking garage that's free on weekends. It's easy to park on the street. You can park there for a couple hours and not worry about anything, free parking. And it's easy. You go right off the highway, and then you're there before you know it. Now, I say it's easy, but I should point out that listener Adrian, who lives not too far from me, he's one of the gentlemen who I game with, and he puts up with all my shenanigans. He is the one who does the driving, and I am very appreciative that he does, because I don't like to drive in the city. But he's going, and I'll say, hey, are you sure you're going? Do you mind if I come with you? And he's fantastic for all that. So anyway, they have this space, and then twice a year, there's this fantastic gaming club called the Boston Trained Bands. Chances are, you guys and ladies might be familiar with them because they run a variety of successful historical wargaming events at conventions throughout New England. They've been at Havoc and at Huzzah, just all over the place. They run amazing stuff, and they are the reason why I really got into Blackwater, because I had read about it, I heard wonderful things about it from other people, and then I had gone up one year to Portland, Maine, and played in some games at Huzzah, and one of them was an American Civil War game, Battle of Alusty, 28mm figures, Perry's, I believe. The Boston Trained Bands ran it, and it was just wonderful. They used Blackwater, so they helped to get this event going, the Hobby Bunker Game Day. This was the 5th year that the event had been run, and they do this game day about this time, late summer, early fall, you know, August, September-ish. Then there's another one in the spring, I believe, and they also hold that at the Hobby Bunker. They talked about it on Facebook, so if you follow the Hobby Bunker on Facebook, on their social media, you would find out about it, and it's in their e-newsletters and all that kind of stuff. So I had seen it, and I had never been, and I was like, hey, this sounds like fun. I was like, hey, dude, are you going? And he said, well, yes, I am. And next thing you know, we made plans to go. We weren't going to plan anything. We didn't. Part of the reason for that was I wanted to meander around and see what was going on and observe some stuff and do shopping, of course, but look to see what was going on and meet up with some people who I usually only get to see at things like this or at conventions, say hi, and get some notes and information so I could talk about the event for this episode of the show. So I knew if I was going to play in the game, there was no way I could do all this, because one, the game would take a while. We'd have to get there really early. Adrian may not want to stay. And two, if I am enrolled in a game, I need to give my attention to that game. I can't say, okay, I really want to play your Zulu War game, but you need to wait 10 minutes so I can make my rounds around and see what's going on. That's not fair to the GM. It's not fair to the other players. So I've gotten in the habit of whenever I'm going to a convention or anything, that I try to balance between what I want to play and my role as podcaster to make sure I get there and I can cover stuff, because I can talk about my experiences playing, but if I really want to do a great job at it, I need to focus too much on that and not enough on actually playing the game. Whereas this way I can just say, oh, look, this is interesting. Let me come over here and, hey, how's it going? Do you mind if I ask a couple questions? And could I take a photo? And that sort of stuff. So that is what the game day is. Now, they had a variety of games that were run, and I made reference to one just a moment ago, a Zulu War game. It's a fictional Zulu War game. And I'm actually going to work my way down, and I'm going to read the descriptions of each of the games, just to kind of give you a feel for what they were doing. And first one I'm going to read is not that Zulu War game, but it's a little different, and I will get to the Zulu one, don't worry. So the event started at 10 in the morning. It was going basically until 10 at night or whenever the store was closing. And that really depended on how many people were going to come to the games and how many people were going to stay and play all day. $5 got you in to play. You play in as many of the games as you wanted all day. There was a morning round, an afternoon round, and an evening round. If you were a GM, it didn't cost anything. Or if you were just coming in to look, it didn't cost anything. Of course, if you go into the store to shop and you just popped in to see what was going on in the back with all those people playing things with models, it didn't cost you anything for that either. So the first game on my list is All Quiet on the Martian Front. Now, this is that successful Kickstarter that was put out not too long ago. I believe Alessio Cavatore was involved with it, and I might be wrong, and if I am, please correct me. So the description for the game is as such. After being defeated in their original invasion, the Martians have returned, having developed technology to battle the infectious air of the Earth. Not to be outdone, the humans have not been napping, and have been preparing for the Martians' imminent return. Join the fray as either a cold-hearted Martian or a red-blooded human as they battle for the fate of the Earth. Sounds exciting, right? This was a really cool game to watch. I had seen a lot of photos online from Historicon and other events of the models and games being played, and they looked really cool. But I was like, I need to see this in person, because this is the kind of thing that I'd be interested in playing. Not that I'm looking for something else to play, and of course, as you all know, if you've listened to episode 113 of the show, Are Painted Miniatures Essential to Miniatures Wargaming? I don't paint my models. Guess, right? So the last thing I need is another system where I would have to buy stuff and then not paint it or be pressured to paint it, and of course, to assemble it. And these things, they look amazing. But the multi-part plastic kits are a little too multi-part, if you get my meaning. Just a lot of tiny pieces and little odds and ends. My days of needing to put together like 9 or 10 pieces minimum for a single guy are way past me. I recall spending too much time being like, okay, here's my 15 pieces to put together a Terminator or a Space Marine or something like that. So that was just a no-go. But the game just looked really interesting. It was fantastic to see. The models are gorgeous. I have to say I highly recommend it for that. And the people who played it, I didn't get to talk with them too much, but they looked like they were having fun. It was the city setting, like a town, and the Martians were invading through the countryside, and the humans were trying to defend and had tanks and things. And, I mean, just it looked really cool. It's actually the second game you saw when you entered the playing space. Now, the next game I want to just mention is called Fenway Park. This is a homebrew game that is gorgeous. The person who created it had, he ran it actually at Havoc, and I think he's run it at Huzzah and a few other things, maybe even at TotalCon, I'm not sure. But I had met him at Havoc and got to see what he was working on and chatted with him, and he remembered me, so that was really nice. He's like, oh, you do the show, and of course it helps that I was wearing my Wargaming Recon t-shirt, which I do whenever I go to something like this. Kind of think of it as my uniform. You know, you go to work and you get to wear whatever you have to for work, whatever their dress code requirements are. We're like, this is my dress code for the show. But the game is really interesting. By the time I had got there, the game had just ended, and they were going to do another one in a second, and I got invited to play, but again, I wanted to make sure I was covering everything. So the description for this game is, can Big Poppy carry the Red Sox past the Cardinals once again? Relive the 2013 Boston versus St. Louis World Series matchup of the two best teams of the season. Baseball managers, fun to play, easy rules. Everyone who played this was so excited to have played it. It looked really interesting, and I have to say that the gentleman who created the terrain, which is Fenway Park, it looks just like the real thing. If you've ever been to Fenway, and even if you haven't and you've only seen pictures or look up a photo and see what I mean, it's gorgeous. And it's really cool because he's personalized it. So there's like little signs he's added to be like, Huzzah 2012 and Havoc 1982. Not exactly, but you know what I mean. So it's added these little things for the places that he's brought it to. Everyone, as far as I know, who's played it has loved it. And when I have some free time, if I'm at an event and he has this there, I would definitely be interested and playing it. It's just, it's so gorgeous to look at. It's the first thing you see when you walked in. He has this big Fenway Park that's huge and takes this whole table. And if that's not eye-catching, I don't know what is. So then the third game on my list is called The Battle of Belmont, Grant's First Civil War Battle. Now this was used with the rules for Carnage and Glory. So anyone who's familiar knows that Carnage and Glory is an American Civil War set, as you would expect by the title of the game, but also it uses a computer to calculate battle results and morale and all that kind of stuff, so it allows you to focus on playing. You don't have to worry about all the little minutiae of this and that and keeping like statistical data, because the computer handles it. It does the rolling for you and everything. I've heard fantastic things about Carnage and Glory. I've never played, but I really enjoyed watching this table. It's just really interesting to see people moving the models and the units around, not rolling dice, not having to worry about how many men were killed. And what's kind of really interesting about it is that you have your models, and you can see that the enemy has models on the table, but you don't really know how many guys they have, how big is their force. And you don't really know, like, they lost 14 guys, but is that 14 out of, like, 5,000, or 14 out of 400, or 14 out of 20? You're not really sure. The computer knows, but you don't. So I like that fog of war aspect. It's too easy nowadays when you are playing a war game and you're at the table and you can be like, okay, these units are on the table and they took like these guys off and they put little chits next to them to represent stuff. And you know what you need to break that unit. You know what you need to cause the army to rout and so forth. But in Carnage and Glory, you don't. So then you play a little more cautiously. It's kind of like if you were playing in a campaign. Your troops are going to carry over in the campaign. So you're going to play it a little safer. You're not going to be like, let's go charging, because you want those guys to live for the next game. And in Carnage and Glory, you don't want to do anything too foolish, because you really want to make sure that you have enough forces left to survive, because your opponent might have even more than you think. Yeah, you did 50 casualties, but maybe they have 450 guys left when you thought, and you're hitting them, no, I think they only have 100. Makes a difference. So the description for this game is, Ulysses S. Grant's first Civil War battle took place in Missouri. On November 7th, 1861, Grant attacked a Confederate camp at Belmont, Missouri, and started down the path that would eventually lead him to be appointed General-in-Chief of the Union Army and elected to the presidency in 1868. See if you can repeat history by overrunning the Reb camp, or will you claim victory with a rebel yell and some timely reinforcements? So like I said, this was a really cool game to watch. A lot because of the Carnage and Glory aspect, but also because it was just a beautiful table. The table had the best looking cornfields I've ever seen, and I'm not really sure how they were made, but they were so gorgeous, better than any of the pre-made stuff, and I would presume that they were scratch built or custom made. The ground surface was teddy bear fur. One thing I liked was that it was a little longer than what you normally see. Listener Adam was playing in this and got to see him, which was really great. I've mentioned him before on the show. He does the Fencing Frog blog. You can look that up online. It's a lot of fun to see what he's working on. And he brought up actually a really good point about the teddy bear fur. He said that it was a little long, and there was a downside to that. Yeah, it looked kind of cool to see because it's like really, really tall grass. So it gives you that feeling of being out, you know, in that area. But he said it was kind of hard to move units around because it was almost too tall. So maybe to trim the teddy bear fur back a little bit. The table was absolutely gorgeous. The models were out of this world. The painting was excellent. For me, this was the most beautiful table at the event that I saw. I should put a caveat, though. There were a lot of really good tables, a lot of stuff that was catching my eye, and I didn't stay for the whole day. I left after this first round. They were during break and left about midday. So there were many other events later on in the day that I didn't get to see. And I'm sure if I had seen those other events, I would have found other absolutely fantastic tables. So I'm not trying to be like, oh, those people's tables sucked or anything. That's not what I'm doing. I want to give credit for this Carnage and Glory game and how beautiful the table was. It was amazing. You ever come across this at any other event or convention anywhere, you should play it because it was just out of this world. It was absolutely gorgeous. So now we get to that Zulu game I mentioned. The event was called Zulu, aptly enough. It's not an actual historical battle. It's a fictional battle. They did this, I think, to allow a little more freedom in what units to field and all that kind of stuff. So it is a historical war game, of course, but it's not like the Battle of Isla Nduwana or Rook's Drift or anything like that. But you get the feeling of everything, and that's really cool. So I like that kind of stuff. I should also note that this game had the most number of people around the table playing. They all looked very excited. They all looked really intensely focused on what was going on. It was packed. I think, my numbers might be wrong, but I think there was a dozen or more people participating in this event, or at least huddled around the table. So that was really cool. Now the description for this is, following the imperialist scheme by which Lord Carnarvon had brought about federation in Canada, it was thought that a similar plan might succeed in South Africa. In 1874, Sir Henry Bartle Frere was sent to South Africa as High Commissioner to instigate the scheme. One of the obstacles to such a plan was the presence of the independent states of the South African Republic and the Kingdom of Zululand. So like I said, it was just a lot of fun to see this and see people playing. I didn't get as many photos as I wanted because there were so many people there. I figured it looked like they were all playing. I don't want to be like, hey, get out of my way so I can take a photo. Because, I mean, that's just rude, right? Now, another game I want to mention is Superstar GM Mike Payne's Hinkai Raiders. I've talked about this before, and he's done all sorts of amazing things with this. This is a 1920s-era Chinese-inspired pulp game. Hinkai, of course, is his fictionalized version of Shanghai. When we got there, it was finishing up. He had some young players there, as he is wont to do. Really, like I said in episode 120, if you want to get your kids into wargaming, and you go to a game day, you go to a convention, you see his name listed running an event, especially if it's this one, you not only need to sign up for it, you need to sign your kid up for it. It is just a blast. So his description for this is, quote, "Don't dare miss the next thrilling installment. Hinkai Raiders, it's not for the faint of heart. There will be fists flying as a ruthless dragon lady on wheels hires the mysterious Dr. Satan and his Hinkai Raiders to help her gain wealth and power. Our heroes must thwart their insidious plan that threatens the world. Help put a stop to their evil scheme in this nail-biter, or join the nefarious villains in wage battle against the heroic forces and take a white-knuckle ride to the brink of doom. Beginners are encouraged. Kids are welcome, and adults that can play with kids are welcome too." I didn't get the details, but Mike did tell me that he did something a little different this time around, and I believe I saw what appears to have been a bunch of zombies on the table. Not really sure if that's true, if they were in fact zombies or not. So I'm hoping to wheedle that out of him. He did say that if all goes well, he's hoping to use this new whatever aspect in future times running this. I thought it was kind of interesting. He had told me beforehand that he was only going to be able to run the event and then leave. He had some prior engagements that he had to deal with. But I thought it was really interesting that the table he used was much, much, much smaller than what I'm used to seeing. And I asked him about it. So he said it was because of having to leave. He didn't want to bring all of that stuff. Because he has tons of stuff. Boxes and boxes and boxes. Like big boxes. Dozens of them. That he puts all the stuff in. And he packs it and everything. A lot of his stuff is scratch built and custom made and everything. And he has it just all that. And he travels all the way down from northern New England to come and do this. And it's gorgeous to see. But I can understand why he made it more compact. One thing I wished I had asked him was how having everything on a smaller playing surface altered things. Because my guess is that it would make it more intense and you would have combat and action happening not only quicker, but more frequently. On a larger table, the players are prone to spread out. And even if you have like a couple dozen people playing on that larger surface, which I've seen happen, they're still spread out because you have like your one guy on there, or maybe a small team, and they're doing whatever. But the table is huge. So if you're all the way over there and then someone else all the way over here, it's going to take you a while to meet up. But on the shorter, smaller table, you'll be able to get in another person's face pretty quickly. I thought that was interesting, and I'd love to find out if that's true. So, Mike, I know you listened to the show. Be sure to drop me a line and let me know what your thoughts were looking back, your reflection on your game. And I really want to know what your special thing was that you did differently, because it seemed really, really cool. The last game that I saw while I was there was a D-Day landing game, of course, for World War II, and it used the bolt action rules. Now, I was a little sad because there weren't many people around the table, but I was happy to see that some of them were young gamers. And I think anytime you can see young gamers enjoying themselves around the game table, that's a good thing. So the description for here is: the Normandy landings, codenamed Operation Neptune, were the landing operations on 6 June 1944, termed D-Day, of the Allied invasion of Normandy in Operation Overlord during World War II. The largest seaborne invasion in history, the operation began the invasion of German-occupied Western Europe, led to the restoration of the French Republic, and contributed to an Allied victory in the war. The models were just, it was so much fun to see what was going on here. The game looked a blast, the models looked amazing, and I really enjoyed seeing the landing craft. That's one thing that I love about D-Day. You see these landing barges, and the fronts come down, and the models come out, and people come on, and so forth. Just something really, really cool to see. The table, of course, was smaller, so the action was condensed, but it seemed more lively, and I didn't get to spend as much time there as I would have liked, but it was interesting to see what I had seen. Now, there were some games I didn't get to observe. There was a War of 1812, Battle of Stony Creek that happened. Fenway Park was run again. There was a Battle of Paris, 1814. I believe that was a black powder game run by the Boston Train Bands. World War I Eastern Front, the Second Masurian Lakes, February 1915. And then there was the First Battle of Ypres, 1914, that was run. This was the signature event. It was run both in the afternoon and the evening. Boston Train Bands were running it. And this was a black powder World War I event. Like I said, it looked amazing. I had seen some photos of it online, and I know they do a great job. So I want to just briefly talk about the importance of game days. Now, I've come up with 5 reasons for why they are important. And people, those of you who listen to my other show, Geeks Explicitly, might get why I did a little chuckle there. My other show, Geeks Explicitly, is a short form weekly podcast where I talk about all aspects of geek life, different things. But it's most known for my top 5 list, which is something I do just about every week on there. I find a topic, I list like 5 great things, 5 awesome things, 5 reasons you should, or you get the idea. So this is like my 5 reasons game days are important, I guess, if I were to be on an episode of Geeks Explicitly. So anyway, 1, and these aren't in any particular order, but 1 is game days help to promote the local community. You have a bunch of gamers who exist somewhere, and they play games together. The game day allows the community to thrive in a variety of ways. But it's important because if you didn't have these game days, a lot of these communities would fall apart. It's hard for people to find the time to get together, to game, to work on whatever. And if they know that they have a game day coming up, they know they're going to be able to play something. So that takes that off for them, because they can say, yep, check, I'm going to be there. And then it gives them the push, I guess you could say, to be like, oh, I got to finish whatever I'm working on because I need it for the game day. Whether you're painting, you're making terrain, you're assembling models, you're promoting an event, you're doing whatever, you're going to go and play something, you're going to bring something for some people, whatever. However you're helping out or just going to participate, you know you have to get whatever completed so that way you can get to the event. Number two, it allows gamers to both find one another and form bonds. So like I said, if you're lucky, there's a bunch of gamers in an area, your area, and you play with them, but maybe you're new to wherever you happen to be. Or maybe you're just not aware of who the other gamers are. You're getting into a game and you don't know who else is a wargamer who likes what that is. And you're like, oh, I really want to play game XYZ, and if only someone was nearby, I could play. Well, you go to a game day, and you can find out other gamers there, and you can say, hey, I like this wargamer. I wonder if they live in the area. I wonder if they play the kind of games I like to play. We play Chain of Command together. I wonder if we can play Chain again and Command together another time. Oh, look, oh, someone over there is playing Saga, and I'm signed up for it. Maybe they would play Saga with me some other time. So that's just, it's really, really cool, so that way you can connect, because it's hard. Even with the use of the internet and all these, like, player finder tools and all that kind of stuff, I find 9 times out of 10, the best and easiest and most successful way of connecting with another gamer is through an event like this, or word of mouth, which you do through an event like a game day. Number three, it gives gamers a chance to grow the hobby. So when you have a game day and you're going to one, you can really introduce all sorts of people to the wargaming hobby. They can be kids there, they can be people who are just passing by. That's one of the reasons why I like game days that are held at places not normally known for the subject matter. So for example, the Hobby Bunker, great place for historical wargaming, right? They have tons of stuff, and they really support this. But what if you had a historical wargaming event, game day, and it was at, say, a game store that did a lot of 40k fantasy? Could you give your game day as a way to capture some of that audience and introduce them to historical wargaming, and thereby grow the hobby to a new group of people, so forth and so forth. At the Hobby Bunker game day, there was a small but significant number of younger wargamers there, and I was really happy to see that. So you can see that you're reaching the younger generation with these kind of things, and that's very, very important. Number four, game days introduce wargamers to games they may not normally play. If I'm someone who just plays Black Powder, and I'm not going to collect, I'm not going to paint Saga, right? But I see a Saga event, I can sign up and I can play Saga. Maybe I might want to play Saga after all, because I really enjoyed it. Maybe I want to play All is Quiet on the Martian Front. Maybe I've discovered a newfound love for Napoleonics or something, or I really want to get into fantasy wargaming and so forth. We don't have the time as wargamers, nor the resources, money or whatever, to purchase, collect, paint, assemble, make terrain, sculpt, and whatever, for every type of game out there, every type of system, every time period or conflict, it's just impossible. And even if we had the interest in all those, we couldn't. But game days allow us to experience games, types of games, and all that sort of stuff that maybe we're just not able to do on our own for whatever reason. And so you can look forward to the game day, you can look forward to a con or whatever, so that you can play in XYZ and be like, oh, I really enjoyed doing Ancients. I can't do it on my own with the people I game with or whatever, but I know I can get a really good game there in Ancient Rome, and we'll see how they do against Hannibal. Number five, game days support friendly local game stores. Prime example is this one, the Hobby Bunker Game Day 2014. It was held in the back of the store, and I think partly that's where the playing space was, but it's ingenious because it forces people to walk through the store. You get to see all the cool products, all the new toys and everything. What's shiny? What may I want to buy? And if you're shopping there, you're giving money to this great, independent, friendly local game store, or one near you, and that allows them to carry the products that you like, but also to run events like this to help you get together so you can promote the community, so you can help gamers to find one another, so that you can help grow the hobby, and so that you can introduce more gamers to other games that might not normally play. You see, it's all tied in together. Now, here's an example. So when I was at the Hobby Bunker Game Day, there's no surprise, I did some shopping, right? So when I was there, I happened to notice, and I was actually really, really excited about this. They had a huge clearance on hat product. So I got some ancient Romans that I didn't really need, but they were on sale, right? So I was able to get Imperial Roman Auxiliaries for $4 a box instead of $7.50. I was able to buy Imperial Roman Command for $5 a box instead of $9. Roman Cavalry was, actually now that I look at it, it was full price, but that's okay. But these are things that I purchased because I know I can get them when I'm there. And I can't necessarily get them other times. I got one of the recent issues of Miniature War Games. That's Henry Hyde's Wargaming magazine that he is the editor of. It's the August 2014 issue, number 376. So I was there and I looked around and I was like, oh, I can do some shopping too. Let me go and see what's going on. And like I said, you shop there, you're supporting them, they're supporting you and the hobby. It's win-win. So now that this has been a long episode, and it has, right? Because I spent all this time just talking about the game day. I still have more stuff I want to talk about, but this is not the usual things. I'm going to get into the mailbag. So I have a few, actually, this is a growing section of the show. It used to be I was lucky to get an email or something like that from someone. And then I was lucky to get that maybe every now and again, but someone might click like on something that was on our Facebook page. But now there's people commenting and posting things on the Facebook page, and tweeting and talking about us on other websites and emailing and all that kind of stuff and instant messaging chats. It's fantastic. I love that you guys care so much and you're so excited about the show that you want to engage with me about it. You want to talk about stuff. You like what's going on. And I love hearing from all of you. I've said way back in like day one in 2006 that my favorite part of all of this was communicating with all of you. I love getting to know, getting to meet, getting to talk with those of you. It's fantastic. It's the best part. For me, the best part of wargaming is to have fun, to hang out with people who I like, the social aspect. And that's also what it is for podcasting, because podcasting can be very lonely. I'm recording this me by myself in my recording studio with my mic in my computer, and that's it. I got to pretend the mic is a person, because otherwise it sounds weird. But I'm doing it. It's a solo activity. Nothing wrong with solo activities, but it's nice to reach out and touch someone, as that commercial used to say. So I have a variety of mailbag kind of things in the mailbag section, these subsections of mailbag. So let's start off with the first one. So listener Reese happened to write on the War Games website, quote, just listened to Henry Hyde's episode, Whilst Painting. Great stuff. Keep up the good work. I have to admit that it was the first time I had listened to your podcast after seeing it, but will definitely be listening to the rest whilst painting. So Reese, I want to thank you for tuning into the show and posting and commenting about it on the Wargames website. I should tell people that I'm working with editor Mike from the Wargames website to try to get him to come on the show. He's agreed. We just have to work out the kinks for our schedule, and I'm hoping to make it happen for this 2014 podcast season. But if not, we'll make it happen for 2015. I'm really excited about the Wargames website. I am very appreciative that editor Mike has allowed me to have my own thread on the Wargames website message board where I can talk about the show and I can say, hey, there's a new episode up. It's about this. You might want to give it a listen and maybe you'll like it. Click this link. He's been very open and encouraging about that. And I'm very, very appreciative. And if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have had listener Reese writing in because I had done that. And then Henry Hyde had put a thread up asking about podcasts and that sort of stuff. And he's like, by the way, I was on Jonathan's show and this is what we talked about. And listener Reese was like, ooh, let me tune in and stuff. So it was really cool. And I'm very intrigued how people listen to podcasts. For example, I like to listen to them when I'm at work. If I'm doing something that's repetitive, I put it on a podcast on my iPhone and I listen to it that way. Or I might listen to it while I'm commuting to and from work or to places. I plug my iPhone into my car, into the speakers, and off I go. But I know some people like to do it when they are exercising. They're going for a walk. They're at the gym. Others like to do it while they're painting or doing other kind of things, house cleaning or whatever. So I'm always intrigued how people absorb this kind of content. And so one thing that seems to keep on coming up with wargamers is they're going to be working on a project. They're going to be painting something, sit there for a few hours, they want something to listen to. So that's why I think a lot of wargamers like longer form podcasts. Myself, I prefer something short and sweet, something I can listen to 15, 20 minutes, no more than half an hour, which makes it kind of ironic that Wargaming Recon is like a half hour, 45 minute episode. In my other shows, 15, 20 minutes. But anyway, so thank you again, Reese, for writing in. And then on Twitter, which is a piece of social media that I'm trying to spend more time with. And honestly, I've neglected it in the past. I'm trying to work more on it. And it's good that I am, because I happen to get a tweet from listener Lars, who said, quote, "Just found your podcast. Excellent stuff." So thank you, Lars, for your very kind words. And I'm glad that you're enjoying the show and that you liked what you've heard so far. There's a lot of episodes for people to listen to. And the cool thing is you can say, I like this episode, and then you can just download all the others or get them on Stitcher or put them into your Downcast or Instacast or whatever app you happen to use and just get all your stuff and queue it up and you're good for a weekend or whatever. Whereas for everyone as it comes out, like if you started listening to day one, you had to wait for all these years to get all these episodes. So that's kind of cool. And then, of course, Facebook is a piece of social media that I've used pretty heavily from just about the beginning of time. And I've used it a lot for the show, for Wargaming Recon. There's been quite a bit of activity on there. So I want to start off with something that was written just a day or two ago as of the time that I'm recording this. And that means nothing to any of you because I don't really know when you're listening to it. You could be listening to the show in 2020 or 2100 or whatever and being like, oh, a day or two ago, he's been dead for years. But you know what I mean. So listener Jay happened to write on Facebook and he said, quote, and this is a long one, people, so just bear with me. He says, quote, "Jonathan, I was listening to Wargaming Recon number 113 in which you ask, are painted miniatures essential to miniatures wargaming? A little behind the times, I know, but bear with me. I'm of a few minds on the topic. For one, it's your hobby. Do with it how you feel. In the privacy of one's home, what one does with other consenting adults with their toy soldiers is their own business. I've played plenty of games with wholly unpainted forces. Doesn't bother me one bit. That being said, if you're participating in an organized public event, you should at least have basic painting done. On some figures, this is easier than others. For example, the 15mm World War II Soviets I'm currently painting will have no fewer than 7 colors on them just to get to fully base-coated sage." Wow, that's my wow nut is. That's a lot. He says, "That's not counting any shading or highlighting that may take place or basing effects." Wow, I can't wait to see your finished stuff. Jay, you should post them on the Facebook page, because, oh, wow, I said wow like 20 times already, but I'm really excited to see how they come out. 7 colors just for base coating. Jesus, that's amazing. He goes on to say, "But I feel better having a fully painted force on the table. It's a better representation of the multidisciplinary nature of the hobby. As I said, it's a multidisciplinary hobby. The facets one chooses to pursue are up to the individual. Of course, the irony of listening to the podcast while painting said World War II Soviets is not lost on me. Please continue the podcast. Good luck to your wife with the rest of her pregnancy." He says, also, "Henry's latest episode is what drew me to pull the trigger and add your show to my Downcast queue. I guess I was implying what I should have expressed. Hell no, they're not essential. At least not as essential as miniatures are in general. Which could lead to another topic altogether. What happens when you take a board game, such as Command & Colors Ancients, and use miniatures in place of blocks or chips on a map or fully realized terrain board?" So, of course, it's clear here, Jay. Thank you, of course, for writing in. You managed to concisely write what I was trying to convey in like an hour-long podcast episode. And I know this episode 113 came out a while ago, but it has staying power, and I figured it might. I was not completely prepared for the strong emotional feelings people have on the issue of how essential painted miniatures are to miniatures wargaming. And I know no one's going to agree with me on this. I'm not going to go back into this really to try to start something. But I think we all have to realize that I chose the word essential for a reason. Because if I said, are painters' miniatures important to miniatures wargaming? The answer is 100% yes. They are very, very important. But are they essential? Essential to me means, if they are not painted, do they not function? Well, no, they function regardless of their status of painting. You could say, are assembled miniatures essential to miniatures wargaming? And I would say, yes, assembled miniatures probably are essential to miniatures wargaming. Maybe not. Maybe that's a topic for another day, looking at this from a different point of view. But, Jay, I think it's really interesting about you raising the idea of taking a board game and blending with things to replace the board game aspects of it with miniatures, or taking a miniatures game and replacing it with board game aspects. I might just have to add that onto my list of topics for down the road of things to talk about. I could do like a whole series, right, people, of, let's see, things that people think are necessary for miniatures wargaming. I could be like, do you need terrain for miniatures wargaming? And what manufacturers are the best? And what rules are really solid? And like all those controversial topics. We know I'm not one to shy away from controversy, right? So thank you very much, Jay. And also on Facebook, listener Adam had a comment. I had shared a photo of 54mm Napoleonic French standard bearers made by Victrix. And listener Adam said, quote, not really a fan of Victrix. They are too brittle. Lots of broken muskets on my 28mm boys. Adam, thank you so much for sharing that. That was not something I was aware of. I've never purchased Victrix at all. I know that they're something sold by the Warlord Games, and you can find them all over. People seem to really, really enjoy them. So I'm curious, just, you know, on my own, how many people experience this problem with brittleness? How much of the models tend to be broken or damaged as a result from brittle plastic? So that would be an interesting question for someone to answer. I also want to say that I've been doing some theme weeks on Facebook where I'll have a certain type of content that I'm going to post. So if you're not someone who's liked us on Facebook, please do. First of all, it's wargamingforums.com/Facebook. But when you go there, you'll see that what I post is a photo. I post a photo and I'll say a little something about it. There's at least one photo every day of the week. I've been trying to get in the habit of two a day, one at 8:20 in the morning Eastern Standard Time and one at noon Eastern Standard Time. So I've done a few themed weeks. I did 2 weeks of 54mm photos, and then I did 1 week of Napoleonics, and I'll have other themes coming up from time to time. Just kind of cool to be like, here's our week of tanks. It's tank week. Maybe I should do that around Thanksgiving for a tanksgiving, right? And I post some photos, things made by different people and this and that and stuff, and be like, what do you think of this? And isn't this cool? And hey, check that out or whatever. People seem to like it. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, you should head on over to Facebook and find out all of that. So let's see. That ends the mailbag section of the show, and let's move on to announcements. I came across some interesting tidbits, and maybe they're just interesting to me because I get intrigued by numbers and stats, and I know that kind of stuff is boring, right? So I'm not going to go too deep into it. Just going to touch on the 4 most popular episodes of the show as of the exact moment that I'm recording this, which is, what is it, September 30th, 2014. Of course, the episode comes out on August 30th, 2014. Wow. Labor Day really messes me up, people, okay? I'm like, it's Labor Day weekend. It must be September. It's not. So August 30th, 2014. And you are hearing it no sooner than September 1st, 2014, which means that the numbers aren't going to change very much between the time I'm recording this, when I check the numbers, and the time you're listening to it, if you got it, like, right on September 1st. So, in first place, as the most popular episode, not only of this podcast season, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say of all time for my show, is Henry Hyde's appearance. It's episode 119, and this is something crazy. So the episode is Henry Hyde, wargaming author, and we talked for like 2 hours just about all sorts of different stuff. If you haven't listened to it, please do. Link in the show notes. But it has over 1,800 downloads. That's over 1,800 people have listened to his episode. So Henry, if you're listening, don't take this the wrong way, but like I know you're popular. I love hearing you talk. I've always enjoyed it. I know a lot of people love what you do, and you've always been a huge draw for my show. I did not expect 1,800 downloads. I thought 1,000, because you do about 1,000 to 1,200. You're just skyrocketing out of there. That is fantastic. So, I'm wowed by all that. And then in second place, if this is going to sound like a huge drop, but these are really, for me anyway, respectable numbers. At over 900 downloads, and each download is a person, generally. So you're talking over 900 people who have listened to this episode. Episode 113, Are Painted Miniatures Essential to Miniatures Wargaming? I'm just going to talk about two more, and then I'm going to explain why I'm mentioning them. Not just be like, hey, look at how many people are listening to the show, because that's conceited and a little arrogant. Number three is episode 114, 5 Tips to Turn Off a Potential Wargamer, and that has just under 900 downloads. It has like 894 people have listened to that. And then in number four, most popular, is episode 107, Turn Your Girlfriend into a Gamer with Aaron Boschian. That one has 893 downloads. Okay, so why am I telling you all this? I'm not just trying to be like, hey, look, I'm cool and people like me, because that's wrong. I'm telling you this for a couple of reasons. First of all, to show you the strength of the show, that the numbers are, except for Henry's show, which is something else entirely, the numbers are pretty consistent. You got 900, 900, 893. Everything's around there for the really popular episodes. And there's not much drop-off for the other one. But the really interesting thing here are the topics. You have Henry Hyde, who's always a drawer. Henry's just amazing. We talk about whatever. One of the longer episodes for the season. 1,800 downloads. So people are just like, ooh, Henry Hyde. We love Henry Hyde. Maybe it's because we talked about his book. His book's a huge draw. I mean, I don't know. The book's fantastic. But then I go to a really controversial topic. And I knew, talking about how important painted minis are or how unimportant they are, depending on your stance on that, that would be kind of controversial and get people interested in what's going on. I didn't really suspect, maybe I should have, that it would be that just powerful and of interest to people. And then you get the thing here, it's tips to turn off a potential war game. And that's like my tongue-in-cheek episode where I'm like, if you want to make sure you never have anyone to play against again, you should do these five things. And really, don't do them. But if you want to just make people angry, then you should do these. So again, that's kind of a controversial thing. And then I think we all have high hopes of finding a significant other and getting them into what we like, whether it's wargaming, whether it's love of movies or comics or going for walks or hiking or whatever. We all have those dreams of being like, oh, we're going to get someone into what we really like. We'll have this common ground. So I think that's why Aaron Boschian's episode about turning your girlfriend into a gamer resonated with all of you. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just thought these were kind of interesting statistical tidbits for all of you to hear. And I try not to share stats on the show because, like I said, numbers boring, right? But I think this is important to kind of just show you that if this is your first time listening to the show, you can really get a firm idea on what kind of show it is. Not only is it long form, not only do we talk about the struggle in New England gaming, but I'm trying to create content that's evergreen, stuff that 10 years from now will probably still hold some sort of importance for people. I could do a popular show where, like, every episode I just talk about new things. And that's cool. There are other podcasts that do that, and they do a good job, and they have a strong following. It's just, that's not what I want to do. And it seems that those of you who listen are agreeing with me. So I'm just really happy that you enjoy what's on the show. And I wasn't going to, but I'm just going to mention this quickly. Near the end of every podcast season, I do my top 10 list, the top 10 most popular episodes. Unless things change greatly, it looks like yet again Henry is going to be in the number one spot. But one of the things I also do is I reach out to the guests who are in the top 10. And I say, hey, you know, you're in 8th place. You could get into 6th place, but you got to motivate your base and see if anyone hasn't listened to the episode yet who's one of your fans. And then they run around and get the people to go, which is really cool. Because it increases exposure, it gets more people to listen to them and hear what they were saying. So I will be doing that yet again this year as we get closer towards the end of the 2014 podcast season. Be on the lookout on the Facebook page to see what that is, because I'll have updates on there, and I'll also get them onto Twitter. So speaking of guests, I want to let you know, upcoming guests are, first, Stephen McLaughlin. He is the head podcaster of WWPD News from the Front. They do a lot of stuff about Flames of War and Bolt Action, and then they have a spinoff about Saga and all that kind of stuff. He will be on episode 122, which is the next episode, and that comes out on, let's see, September 15th. And then after that, on episode 123, I have Jasper Ortiz. He's going to come back to discuss the results of the Great Wargaming Survey. They've been releasing some of that information on the WSNS Facebook page, so you should check that out. But we will get down and dirty with all the ins and outs of the results on episode 123, so I'm really looking forward to that. And then speaking of guests, I want to mention that over the years, I've been honored and lucky to have a variety of guests on the show. And I've gone about and picked who I think each of you might like and who I really wanted to have on. But I would really love to know who you would like me to have on the show. So if there's people you can think of that you'd love to hear on here as a guest, please let me know. And even better, if you can share their contact information if you have it, or if you know them, you can give me an introduction to them. It makes life even easier. And then I can try to work on getting some of those people on the show. So I would love to do that. And then I just want to remind all of you, there is the episode guide. You can check it out. It tells you what upcoming show topics there are, the release dates, and then maybe there's an episode you missed in this podcast season or previous podcast seasons. And you can go and see what that is and then click on it, read the show notes. You can download it, stream it live, all that kind of stuff. And speaking of ways to get our episodes, other than the episode guide, one thing you can do is go onto iTunes. And iTunes is a great way to subscribe because you get episodes automatically. All you have to do is listen to them and they just show up on your computer or your device and you can get all of that. iTunes is also the number one podcast directory around. So people love it because just about all the podcasts are in there. And that makes it just easy to find what you want to listen to. Now, part of that is when you're looking at podcasts in the directory, chances are you're going to go with a podcast that has some reviews, especially if they're good reviews or great reviews. So I want to encourage all of you, whether or not you listen to us via iTunes or subscribe to us via iTunes, if you have iTunes, please take the moment to not only rate us, but leave a review. If you do leave a review, I'm able to get that information. I can say, oh, so-and-so left a review, and then I'll take that review, and I'll read it on the air, and I'll give your name. So, for example, like last time, I happened to mention that Steve B. from Canada left a 4-star review titled Great Stuff, and they happened to say, a great podcast full of variety of good quality information. So you'll be able to hear yourself mentioned on the show, and I'll say thank you very much because I really appreciate that you take the time to write in or to leave a review and all those kind of things. And if you leave a review on iTunes, not only do you help people to find the show, but you help to grow the hobby. And growing the hobby is very, very important. So thank you to all who have left reviews, and I want to encourage the rest of you to take the time and leave a review. If you need the link, well, that's in the show notes at wargamingforums.com/WR121. That's wargamingforums.com/WR121. That'll have links to what I've talked about and covered in the show, links to iTunes so you can leave a review. I'll also tell you that you can find us on Facebook. We're at Twitter. You can send me an email, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Make it nice and easy so you can do all that kind of stuff. And then I don't talk about it a whole lot just because not a lot of people ever really used it. And I figured, well, if no one's going to use it, maybe I just won't mention it anymore. But it is possible for you to leave a voicemail. I have a phone number you can call. Don't worry. You can call anytime, day or night. It's not going to ring on my end. It goes to a voicemail box. But it's 347-470-GAME. That's 347-470-4263. Call that up. You leave your voicemail. Say, hey, this is what I think about whatever. And then I can get that and say, oh, this is really cool. And then I can take that and put your audio with your voice right into a future episode of Wargaming Recon. Oh, as always, that brings us to the end of our episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing about the Hobby Bunker Game Day 2014. Those really cool parts from Mealbag, from Twitter, from Facebook, and all that sort of stuff. I appreciate each person who took the time to write in, who takes the time to like something on Facebook, leave a comment, or retweet. I'm just thankful for all of you. So Thank you yet again for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Be back on September 15th with a new episode when Stephen McLaughlin from WWPD News from the Front will come on, talk about all sorts of cool things. And until then, no matter how busy your schedule is, no matter how many models you're painting, no matter how much time you're spending chatting with me on Facebook, you have to, you need to, you gotta keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.